Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Saw a story on CTV Vancouver Island the other night, and I thought, no. Can stuff like that really be happening in our system? All of us count on our healthcare system to look after us at times when we are at our most vulnerable. For example, you're hit by a car, you're semi-conscious, you're literally at risk of death in that moment. You need to know that you can count on first responders, on paramedics, and of course, on hospital staff. If you are lucky enough to make it to the hospital, look after you to protect you. Listen to this story that was on CTV the other night.
Alleging staffing shortages at Victoria General Hospital are to blame for their loved one not getting proper care. The teen is a cancer survivor who right now needs to be fed through a tube. And as CTV's Brandon Strange shows us, the family claims sometimes he is forced to go without.
All I want is to be able to sleep.
This video, shot on Monday of Des Young, shows him pleading with hospital staff for food after he says he had not eaten for 4 days.
I just want nutrition. That's literally it.
Des has been in the hospital for 11 months. He says he often goes days without any food.
So I have a surgical J-tube, and sometimes it breaks, and then I also have to have it replaced every 3 months.
Des has to feed through a tube due to life-saving chemotherapy he had undergone as a child to treat leukemia. His digestive tract is now damaged due to 2.5 years of those treatments. And when that tube fails, it has to be replaced in interventional radiology.
And the problem is the lack of resources in interventional radiology. So Des is bumped.
That's Des' mother speaking.
Over and over again because of the amount of stroke patients or other traumas that are coming in.
Des' mother says what her son is being put through is unacceptable.
So Des has been up to 16 days at a time without nutrition other than an IV saline drip.
For the 16-day period, I was so thirsty. I was so weak. I was so shaky. And I actually fell a couple times when transferring just because I was just so dizzy and unsteady.
CTV News reached out to Island Health to ask them for comment on the allegations brought forward by the young family. In a statement to CTV News, Island Health says, due to privacy laws, we cannot discuss or disclose details about individual patients or the care they receive. We are also concerned when care received does not meet a patient's expectations, and we take all care complaints seriously. Not good enough, says Des's mother.
I want to know who's in charge of not feeding my child for 16 days and who's going to protect my child right now.
I have a freaking feeding tube. All I want is to be able to sleep more than 8 hours in 48 hours.
For Des, he says this is an example of our medical system's achievements and failures.
You know, as soon as I saw this, I thought, we need to get this young man on the program because what is being described here is very disturbing. I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us and telling your story. Des Young joining us, a patient at Victoria General Hospital whose story you just heard told. Good morning and thank you for your time.
Morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well today.
What's it like to see yourself on TV and have a story like this become public?
I mean, it's strange. I never expected to have to take it to here to have my problems addressed, and I wish there was an easier way to resolve this, but I think that it's important that people know what's going on and what it's actually like here, because before I had to use the service, I didn't realize the gaps in care that there were.
The report says you've gone 16 days at a time without nutrition. Now, you had a saline drip, like an IV, but like nothing for 16 days?
Yeah, for 16 days was the longest period of time that I had to be without food, and it was intense, and I didn't think that we would let it go for that long.
When was that?
That was a few months ago. I can't remember exactly the date, but we've had a lot of stuff since then.
How often do you normally eat using the special system?
Yeah, so I get 100% of my nutrition via a tube into my small bowel, and I run it 24/7 throughout the day.
What happens when it's turned off during those 16 days? Do you feel hungry? Do you feel weak? Like, what is it like?
I was very hungry and weak, and I think the thing that made it even worse was the fact that I hadn't had good nutrition beforehand to have a lot of reserves left to wait that long, and I also have a lot of autonomic nervous system issues that are worsened when I don't get my nutrition.
Help us understand what you mean when you say autonomic nervous system issues.
So, yeah, the chemotherapy damaged the part of my nervous system that operates all the things that you don't think about, like digestion, blood pressure, heart rate, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, have you noticed any change in the care that you're getting since this has gone public? Are you getting more attention? Are you getting proper nutrition right now?
Yeah, so every time I get my tube changed, we have to work over a period of time to get to the right rate, and we're not quite there yet. But I've been able to talk to a few people yesterday about hopefully ironing out the replacement process and having more attention for chronic care so that this doesn't keep being an issue.
Our guest is Des Young, a patient at Victoria General Hospital. You can hear him talk about the challenges that he's been dealing with. I think your mom, by the way, is doing a great job advocating for you on TV. She's wearing that shirt that says Advocate Like a Mother. I tell you, that's impressive.
Totally. And the nurses and doctors here on the floor have been amazing advocates for me as well. Okay. And they've spent a lot of hours calling, but the problem is that we don't have the resources to make it happen. And so we need to reallocate some funds, and we need to see the importance of chronic care.
Absolutely. Des Young, I want to say thank you for very, very much for coming on my show today and helping our audience understand what's happening. I'm sorry that you have to go through this at all. And my hope is that the folks who are in charge of everything, who might be listening right now, are going to make whatever changes that are necessary to ensure that this never happens to you again. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with us for the moment?
Nope, that's it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. If there's anything we can do to help, let us know, all right?
For sure.
All right. Have a good day. That's Des Young. That's really distressing to hear that any person would have to go through that at all. Don't fully understand the behind-the-scenes issues. And as you have seen, CTV reached out to Island Health, and there are privacy concerns at issue here. He seems comfortable telling his story publicly, so I don't fully understand why we can't get the other side. But if there's anything that we can do to help better understand this issue and to help ensure that he gets the care that he needs and so does everyone else, I'd be happy to facilitate that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go to open lines, 250-386-1161. Back after this.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Okay, I promise time for open lines. Some of you have been waiting for quite some time. This is your time to shine, 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. We'll go to Gordon first. Hey, Gordon, are you there? All right. Here, I think I kind of snuck up on Gordon there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to myself for a few seconds while the delay works its way through, and he is able to hear me say his name through the radio speaker, which operates a couple of seconds behind the live feed that would come over the phone, and then we'll try him once again. I want to go back to Gordon here. Hey, Gordon, are you there? I can hear him. He's there. All right. We'll put Gordon back on hold. We'll go to Dan. Hey, Dan, you're on the air. Welcome to Open Lines. How you doing?
Hey, not bad, Adam. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I just want to commend you for the good work you do for our city here.
Well, I do my best, Dan. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And, I am just pissed beyond... I'm just pissed. You know, I'm a taxpayer. I've been a taxpayer to the city for about 24 years, and I was also a healthcare worker for 33. And I have looked after people that have been choked out. I've looked after people that have been stabbed. I've looked after people that have been shot. I've looked after people that have had multiple injuries done by another human being. And you know what? The decisions the city council is making is absolutely a joke. Sarah Potts, Dumbo, Isaac, and Lovejoy, whatever his name is, they're an embarrassment to the city. And Lisa Helps is a disgrace. And I'm so pissed. I don't know what more I can say. They should Google what happens to people when they get stabbed and shot and choked out with brain injuries. And when somebody's challenged already, You know, it's just appalling what they're doing and their decisions they're making. And I'm just going to leave that, and thank you very much for having me.
Dan, thank you for your service to this community working in the healthcare system, as well as supporting financially the necessary undertakings that we require taxpayers to support for society itself. Dan is, in my view, accurate in his assessment of, and I want to limit this, what happens when somebody gets shot, what happens when somebody gets stabbed. You know, it's not like on TV where it's like, oh, I got stabbed, and you put a Band-Aid on it and you're fine in the next scene, because that's Hollywood. It's not like, oh, you get shot, oh, it's fine, it's just a flesh wound. No, when you are stabbed and when you are shot, your life changes. In some cases, forever. You might end up having your digestive system no longer work and require being fed through a tube in a manner perhaps not overly dissimilar from what our last guest had, although our last guest, that young man, underwent chemotherapy, and that was the reason for his need for that particular medical prosthesis. But yeah, when you get shot, when you get stabbed, you are never the same, ever. And every single time it happens here in Victoria, that's one more life that didn't make it through COVID unscarred. I wish that everybody could have made it through this horrible, unprecedented time in our city's history without permanent scarring. And if I had anything to say about it, and I don't, because I'm powerless, just like the rest of you, watching helplessly as they do whatever pleases them at the table across the street over and over again, I probably would have hired like 50 cops, honestly. Look, if we had to have dangerous people in the parks because there was literally nowhere else for them to go, we couldn't put them in remand because their legal rights would be violated because of risk of COVID infection, they couldn't stay in the shelters because of risk of COVID infection, if they had to stay in the parks because there was literally nowhere else for them to go, and I do argue that that is not necessarily the case. It's a suspicion, it's an opinion, but it is just an opinion. I would have, for heaven's sake, spent a pile of money on policing and public security to make sure that those parks remained orderly and that the neighborhoods around the parks stayed safe. Council didn't do that, though. It did the worst of both worlds, in my view. It took some of the most dangerous and hard-to-house individuals that would ordinarily literally be behind bars waiting trial for various offenses, set them free in the parks, and then they tried to defund the police department. They hauled Delmanic in front of them, and they said, can you comment on the wisdom of disbanding Vic PD? Now, if you're a dangerous person who has a violent history, or if you're one of the many sexual predators that has called Beacon Hill Park home over the last year, and you saw that on your television, you saw that on the public broadcast your city council causes to be published on the internet every time council meets publicly, what message are you getting from that? Are you getting that you should behave, that you should watch out, because if you break the law, you're going to jail? Or are you thinking now is the best time in your life to be a man who preys sexually on the vulnerable here in the Victoria area? Because the only thing that could stand in your way is the cops. They're the only thing you fear. And they're weaker and more run off their feet than they've ever been. I don't think it is a coincidence. I think that what we have seen in terms of the crime wave, yes, it's partially systemic. And it's because COVID backed up the criminal justice system and made it harder to keep accused offenders in remand, because if they catch COVID in jail, they can literally die. I understand that. But the coincidental, well, at least I hope it's coincidental, efforts to defund the police, to undermine public confidence in the police, to, you know, politically attack the police over and over and over again, like the Together Victoria crowd has. imagine not seeing the obvious message that was being sent. Like, could anybody honestly not read between the lines as to what is happening and suspect that we would see an increase in crime? And of course we did. Of course we did. Why wouldn't we? And it happened, like it keeps happening. The editorial in the Times calling us today mentions that. A horrific, horrific alleged crime taking place at Beacon Hill. And also, afterwards, apparent alleged efforts to cover it up and to stop the young person from going to hospital, because then maybe the doctors would find out how old they were, the fact they were developmentally delayed, so there might be consent issues, even if they were overage, which they weren't, to say nothing of the horrific injuries that are potentially life-altering that they suffered. And you've got people actively obstructing medical care for that person, actively trying to keep the cops away. Why? Is it because they knew how old the person was? And is it because they knew that if that person got to the hospital and was positively identified, that everybody would know what they were knowingly protecting and shielding and turning a blind eye to? They'll, of course, say they didn't know how old the person was. And it's relatively easy for them to lie, because how do you prove that they didn't, right? It's not like they keep minutes at their little meetings at their tent city. But yeah, things have never been worse. And the group of politicians across the street, I think, should shoulder more blame than any other level of government. Hey, Richard, you're on the air. How you doing?
Pretty good, Adam.
Don't ask me to do political advocacy. I can't, so don't, okay? That's what yesterday was about.
No, please don't let your ego...
It's not my ego, Richard. There are rules.
What you think I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, yesterday you told me to endorse somebody for mayor, so I'm not going to do that.
I did not tell you.
Yes, you did. You said name somebody who's an alternative. That would be an endorsement. I can't do that.
No, as a Victoria citizen, I said, do you happen, have you heard about anybody? I wasn't saying endorse.
Okay, I just want to be clear.
No, yeah, well, I want to be clear.
Thank you.
It's not really respectful for you to cut me off and hang up on me twice.
Richard, do you think that good faith will be used for your words for critics who spend every day trying to figure out how to shut me down?
Okay, Adam, do you subscribe to denial? Do you think denial is a healthy thing in
Richard, I think that there's a group of politically connected people out there who spend all day, every day, trying to figure out how to get this show taken off the air, and I would prefer that you didn't make it easy for them.
I'm going to suggest that part of the reason why you and we listeners and so on, why we're struggling, baffling, is that you're lacking a certain level of comprehension about mayor and council.
Am I?
Yes, for months.
Okay.
I have said to you, the day that Lisa Helps was elected, she didn't want to swear allegiance to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
But these people despise. They think that we entitled settlers who want to go into Beacon Hill Park are less important than the people, the criminals that are acting up in Beacon Hill Park. That's their line of thought. Now,
I don't think they actually believe that. I think they say that, but I don't think they actually believe that.
There you go. That's where we differ, and that's where I think you have an important misunderstanding.
Okay, fair enough.
The point I have been trying to make for the last day or two is that this mayor and council are not some carpetbaggers who are just appeared and are illegitimately clinging to power. I suspect that if you go out and ask 95% of their voting base what they think of things like the situation at Beacon Hill Park.
You realize you're justifying them right now, Richard. You're saying that what they're doing is good. Yes, you are, because if they have Democratic support, what they're doing is okay.
That's right. That's how they see it. I'm not saying that's legit. I'm not saying I like that. I despise them. I happen to despise anyone stupid enough to keep voting them in. But we cannot remove them and defeat them as a society if we don't get real about who they are and how they got to power and how they're hanging on to power and what they see as their agenda. If we're just going to simply demonize and pretend that They're carpetbaggers clinging illegitimately to power, and how can this be happening? That's why it keeps happening, because there's a fatal miss.
That's not why it keeps happening, Richard. It's
listen,
not. Yeah, I know you think it is, but it's not. Please, understand.
You think Muhammad Ali could have stepped into the ring and defeated George Foreman?
I don't know. If they had somebody drug his opponent so they passed out halfway through the fight, he'd probably win. He'd probably get the most wins, Richard. And people would say, how does he get the most wins all the time? Maybe it's because people sabotage his opponents is what I would say in that boxing scenario.
No, it's because he didn't go in.
Oh, my God. Read between the lines, Richard.
He didn't go in saturated with denial, thinking that George Foreman didn't belong in there, wasn't good enough, and was just going to lay down for him. Listen, I'm just going to say that you don't like the angle. You're catching some kind of a whiff of me legitimizing this. Yes, I guess I am.
You just did. You said that 95% of their supporters, and they get the most votes, want them to do what they're doing. You are saying they are justified.
I totally believe that.
Well, I think you're wrong, Richard, because you're saying that they should keep going. They are allowed to do this. They have public support. You're saying they have public support. I don't think they do.
I'm saying that it's up to us to...
But there's not enough of you. You just said that they get the most votes and they have public support.
I'm saying, let's not necessarily you. I'm not asking you
I'm not going to, but Richard, you're defeating yourself. You're arguing why you should lose and why it's good.
I'm saying the way to get rid of this is for strong candidates for mayor and council to appear.
No, it isn't. It's to stop the opponents from being drugged so they lose the match halfway through. Hypothetically limited to the boxing example, of course, in my opinion. Quick break, back after this.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
I spent the last 6 months mapping curious connections between supposedly non-political organizations, politicians, and vast sums of money flowing between them. You're completely entitled to your opinion and presumption that your electoral system is fair and that previous civic elections were fairly won and that future civic elections will be decided fairly. Others may be more skeptical, given the publicly available information and the admitted ambiguities that still exist. But Richard, I do thank you for the call. I disagree. I don't think that they have legitimate public support for what they've done. I think it looks like they do, given the tallies that we see on voting day, but I don't think those tallies accurately reflect the public will. And I think that saying that 95% of their supporters want them to do all this stuff and that they get the most votes actually makes them very, very happy. Because then they don't have to defend the legitimacy of the system itself that they actually do exercise a not insignificant amount of control over, like when they set the budget such that, or that, like when they authorized mail-in ballots in the December election, they either knew or ought to have known. They were creating a situation where more than 1,000 ballots would literally be thrown in the garbage. And that's exactly what happened. But I digress. Let's see. What was I going to say next? We will get back to open lines here at CFAX 1070 250-386-1161. Meanwhile, CTV reporting something has to give. Janitors at Uptown Shopping Center voting to strike. I want to welcome our next guest here to CFAX 1070. Good morning and thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us.
Morning.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You represent janitors at Uptown.
I would say I represent myself.
All right. Well, you're on my show representing janitors at Uptown. If there's been an error, we can rebook.
No, I do.
Like what? You do
I am a member of SEIU,
okay.
Local 2 at
yep.
Uptown.
All right.
I have taken a portion of the bargaining committee duties to help my coworkers.
Okay. Lance Bradowski is our guest. He's a janitor at Uptown. I saw you quoted in the CTV article about this. You and your colleagues say that you have been put through too much already and something has to give. What's been happening?
We've been working through this pandemic with no increase in hours, no increase in wages, no paid sick days, and we're starting to burn out. Mm-hmm. And the company, after we unionized, has not been willing to meet what we feel are reasonable requests for better pay, paid sick days. And it's gotten to the point where we don't want to strike, mm-hmm. but if the company doesn't listen, that's our only option.
SEIU Local 2, union representing janitors at Uptown. You are on the bargaining committee, though, yes?
Yes.
All right. What is the current difference between what is being offered and what is being sought in terms of wages? Can you tell us?
About $1.50.
All right. And you make how much right now per hour in terms of, or how does it work?
We have two classifications, light duty and heavy duty. The light duty start at $15.25, and then there are premiums for doing special different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And the exterior guys, which are considered to be heavy duty, start at $15.75.
Now, you and other workers voted to unionize with the organization back in June of 2020 during the pandemic, yes?
Yes.
Talk about what led to that.
Unfair work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling that we weren't being acknowledged as humans.
Now that you're in a union, my understanding is your workers have voted to strike. What can you tell us about that?
It came about because the company has just, every time we've come to bargaining, the company has seemed like they've been dragging their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time we sat down with them, they gave us a lowball offer. It basically was no raises. And then, like, next year it was, like, 1%. Which, when you're making $15.25 an hour, is 15 cents.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot, is it?
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about when strike action or job action could begin. Because as of Tuesday, when this report was published, the union local did not say when any strike or job action was set to begin. Is there a date?
That I have not been privy to at the moment.
Okay. How will you know? Will there be a meeting? Will somebody send you an email? What will happen?
There will probably be a meeting.
Do you know when?
No, I haven't been told at this point in time.
Okay. Do you have a sense? Could you take a guess, like a week, a month, a day?
The situation is still fluid, and we are still working to resolve this without a strike.
Okay. So the vote is strike if necessary, just to make sure I understand.
It is to put the company on notice that we are serious.
Okay. Our guest is one of the cleaners who work in a highly trafficked public space in the midst of the third wave of COVID-19. They say they are not being treated like they are essential. Our guest and others responsible for cleaning portions of the Uptown Shopping Center. Lance Spradowski is our guest. He's a janitor at Uptown, also a member of the bargaining committee for SEIU Local 2. Thank you very much for your time. Any final thoughts?
No, thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
Bye.
All right, folks, let's take a quick break. Go back to open lines.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, 250-386-1161, star 1070. It would be great if we lived in a political environment, ladies and gentlemen, where we could criticize our municipal government without having a fear that they might misuse their powers to punish critics, either in the media or concerned citizens. But we don't live in a municipality like that. We live in a municipality like that where it is entirely reasonable to worry that the municipal politicians at that table might misuse their powers to target critics and might misuse the position of their high office to target critics. And, you know, even if they had done that, it's not like they issue a press release when a finding like that is made. So, you know, I would love to be more freewheeling and whatnot with our calls and with open lines and with Richard asking me to, you know, say who I think should be the mayor. But it's not appropriate for me to say that, so I'm not going to say that. What I will continue to do is focus on the bad policies that are hurting the people of this city and the politicians who caused or sustained the bad policies deserve to be criticized. Actually, I think they deserve a lot worse than that, quite frankly. But the rules are the rules, so we can't sue them for policy decisions. Litigation immunity exists, of course, to a certain degree. What we can do, though, is criticize them and shout at them. That's the only form of censure we have. We can't do it in person because COVID-19 has placed them up on a cloud where none of us filthy mortals can ever actually get close to them. We can just watch them through our computer screens while they operate from within the halls of power. But we can yell about it on open lines. Doesn't feel very satisfying to do that. Feels like it's inadequate, but these are difficult times with COVID-19. We are where we are. Let's go to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm not sure what that last interview was. It seemed like he was unprepared, ill-placed. I don't know. What was it about? It's about, look at us. We're being badly treated. I'm in the same industry. When I have a problem with an employer, you know what I do? I speak loudly. I speak loudly with my feet. I leave. I can't tell you how many clients I've had in the last year, 2 years, 3 years, say, Kevin, can you please come back? And this is not to knock myself up, but I am very good at what I do.
Yeah.
I don't advertise. I go completely by reputation, word of mouth. I won't tell you what I make because that's my business. I work hard for what I do, and everything comes out of my pocket. My supplies, my equipment, my insurance on my vehicle, my insurance on myself, everything is all on me. But When I have a problem, I speak loudly with my feet. I can get that gentleman a job for in the mid-20s right now. I know lots of people that are looking for people, and it's not in that industry. The reason he stays is because he's got union protection, plain and simple. If it was that horrible, he would have been gone a long time ago. Same with when the teachers complain. It's the union. If you don't like your job, leave. I can't tell you how many jobs I've left over the years, and not in cleaning, but in my previous life. You can tell my tone today. I'm angry.
Yeah.
I was talking to a client and a friend. He's a friend as well as a client on Monday. He has a compromised child. He has a very risky job. And we discovered what we're going through right now is anger. Anger at almost everyone out there, except for the people that are pulling the rope. We are so sick of people whining and complaining. Just do what we need to do. We are so entitled nowadays. I brought up the point of my mother-in-law having to live in darkness at night behind the borders of Germany because the English were coming to bomb them, even though she wasn't with the party that was in there. They got trapped behind the lines. My grandparents that fled Poland because of what was happening. But they did what they had to do. People aren't doing what they have to do. Our public health officers, I tried to listen to them yesterday. They just go on and on and on. And I know I'm doing that right now. But you lose people. Just tell us what we need to hear. Tell us straight up. Treat us like adults. And maybe people will listen. Otherwise, they tune out. They disappear. And that's why you're not getting traction with young people. You're approaching them in a way that they're not going to hear. We were both young people at one time. We were invincible, and we didn't pay attention. But if you get in their face, and not by blaming them, but get in their face and say, look, these are the people that are dying. Put a billboard on the bloody Pape Highway, if you have to, of people dying. I don't care what you do. We are in a war situation, and we are not treating like it. I know you get mad at City Hall and the mayor and council. I do, too. But I get mad at the province. You know, he comes out with the fact that, oh, I don't like what they're doing. Then do something about it. Words are cheap. Actions speak loud. Same with city mayor and council. Do something. Do it right or get out of the way. But, you know, when I hear somebody complain about Zoom fatigue, I feel like telling them to shut the you-know-what. You've got a job and you get to work from the safety of your home. I know people that have lost their jobs, lost their industries. So the next time I hear you say Zoom fatigue, you're going to be tasting my toenails. I'm going to put my foot so far up your you-know-what.
Yeah, and you're speaking so metaphorically, of course, because otherwise they'll complain about inciting violence or whatever. Okay, thank you.
No.
Thank you.
But you know what I mean,
yeah,
right?
I do. Yeah.
It's agitating.
Yep.
I've been out there every day during this because people want me to come. I had a bunch of people shut me out. I didn't try to convince them otherwise because they were afraid. We were all afraid. So I just went, I understand. So they kept me out for a while, and when they realized, we feel safer with you coming and keeping us clean and disinfected, they asked me to come back. So I did. I just can't tell you. My wife is so aggravated. She's like, why are we doing this? I feel like just giving up. You know, people go here, there, everywhere, and I'm stuck in the house. I don't go anywhere. She doesn't go anywhere unless I take her out for a drive or something. I'm the one out there facing this every day.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, I get 2 days off a month. Am I complaining? No, I'm lucky. If I could, I'd be working 14 days a week. I've turned down so much work because people didn't want to work, too. I've taken on a bunch of jobs where people went, oh, CERB, I can make $2,000 a month. I think I'll go home and sit on my you-know-what and collect money from the taxpayer. Well, I make quadruple that in a month. So for me to sit on my butt is not where I'm at to begin with. But to make that kind of money on the backs of the taxpayers, forget it. You know what? You don't want your job? I'll take your job.
Well, so, you know, it's a
I want people to just bear down, get through this. I want the province to do what's necessary, the city to do what's necessary, get us through this, the feds to do what's necessary. Otherwise, we're going to be in this for years because the variants will just continue to come.
Yeah,
and they're going to get worse and get worse and get worse. This is, in a sense, World War III.
We need to vaccinate
except
the world.
I know. Except our foe is invisible. So stop complaining, stop playing politics, and do
what needs to be done. I can't tell you how angry I am at the planet right now.
Kevin, thank you very much. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. And, you know, there was actually the Zoom fatigue debate at council that Kevin's talking about. It was February, I think, 4th, I want to say.
I feel pressure to sit here for 12 hours, 16 hours some days in a building that is overdue for an HVAC system overhaul and without a mask on. And I raised that today because I think we need to make sure we're not pressuring each other or our staff. And I think that is a very important part of this.
Yeah, because we're really concerned about the safety of staff. Let's see. Well, what else was said that day?
No, sorry, Councillor Potts, Councillor Dubois, Councillor Loveday.
I appreciate my colleague's comments on this so far. I mean, on the outside of this, it's a seemingly benign motion, but we all know there is more to it, as has been alluded to today.
Yeah, one of your colleagues was secretly at his other volunteer job at a nonprofit at Beacon Hill Park while literally debating other matters.
I mean, in this time of COVID where nothing is normal and we're all managing this challenging new existence, and where the mayor has said often many of us are pinch hitting to serve the needs of our community, this motion that I believe could have been handled in an email or between us.
That's not what that term means, by the way. Emails are for one-way communication of information. A meeting is so back and forth can happen without 15, you know, reply alls with everybody, you know, getting bombed with emails. But, you know, that was quite a clever quip when I saw one of the Together Victoria supporters write it on Facebook days before that meeting happened. Maybe she borrowed it from them, or maybe they borrowed it from her. Who knows? Maybe much like Newton and Riemann both came up with calculus at the same time in different locations, it was just a good idea whose time had come.
So in the full disclosure, being on camera for 3 hours and doing heavy lifting and amending motions and helping craft proposals from colleagues into motions and emailing those, I actually had a splitting headache by the end of the last item. And I rarely take headache medication, but I actually took a pill to get through the remainder of this meeting.
I want to thank him for his sacrifice.
But I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, and we know that a lot of us had Zoom fatigue.
A lot of them had Zoom fatigue. So that's what Kevin was talking about. Let's go back to, I'll try Gordon again. Hey, Gordon, are you still there? No, I think we lost Gordon. Sorry about that, Gordon. Let's go to Jazzy. Hey, Jazzy, how you doing? Welcome to the program.
I'm doing well, Adam. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, well, I just want to reference a tweet that you sent out about the April 15th closed meeting from City Council where they were discussing law enforcement and potential litigation, bylaw compliance strategy for the end of 24/7 sheltering.
Yes.
The one that Dubois and Isaacs opposed.
Yep.
So when I look at the rules here, I'm confused. Maybe you can clarify this.
Sure. Yeah.
So
if I can.
It was an excerpt of closed minutes, and they actually passed a bylaw. Now, when I go to the government website and see the rules, it says local governments may not adopt bylaws in a closed meeting. All council or board votes on the reading or adoption of a bylaw must be made in an open meeting, even if the issues that gave rise to the bylaw were discussed in a closed meeting.
Yes.
So is how they're doing things legit?
Yes, it is. Yep, my understanding, and it is an imperfect understanding, but my layperson's understanding is that the bylaw itself, prohibiting sheltering in parks, that was a public debate. The vote was 7-2.
Mm-hmm.
How the city should pursue its legal strategy with prospective litigation to enforce its bylaw can, of course, be decided in private. In this case, there was a decision made by council to rise and report on this matter and have the minutes caused to be published to the City of Victoria website, and it's that link that I put out on my Twitter page. But my understanding is that this was done appropriately because the public vote of 7-2 to actually change, amend the bylaw itself was a matter of public record. It's interesting, though, because you get to see that while 7-2 was the vote to cause the bylaw to be amended, the vote to actually pursue litigation and delegate that authority to the city manager to engage the city solicitor at both of their discretion to go to court if necessary was much closer. It was 5-4. It passed by one vote with Stephen Andrew.
Yes. And I feel that these councillors are contradicting themselves. It's just like, if you're voting for, why are you voting one way and then voting opposite in the second part of the motion? It doesn't make any sense.
Counselor Loveday, I questioned him about that, by the way. I had a couple of questions I sent him, and he kindly responded to me. I want to thank the counselor for his attention in that matter. He told me, among other things, that he feels that injunctions are one of many tools to do with enforcement. He was uncomfortable delegating the power to the city manager and the city solicitor, so it would essentially be out of council's hands. And he said he would prefer that council itself decide, in private, of course, whether or not to literally sue people who refuse to move on a case-by-case basis.
And what would be the likelihood of that, do you think?
I have concerns, as you know, with, if not conflict of interest, then the perception of bias that some folks have in their minds because one of the counselors founded a nonprofit that has received vast sums of public money provisioning the folks in the parks. Here's a hypothetical. Let's say that there's a group of campers in the park and Red Cedar Cafe is feeding, let's say, 50 of them, two meals a day. That's $7 times two meals times 50. You're going to get into a substantial sum of money there. Is Ben Isaac going to vote to literally take those campers to court to clear them out when that could cause a disruption to the operations of the nonprofit that he built? Like, that sort of tension that would have to be in a person's mind. It doesn't make me feel comfortable, Jazzy. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong per se with it. I'm saying it makes me feel uncomfortable. If they delegate the decision to sue or not sue to the city manager and to the city solicitor and then relinquish control over it, I don't have to worry about perception of bias because if they're not the ones making the decision, I don't have to worry about influence.
Yes, yes. And they seem to have very poor boundaries, these counselors, right?
Indeed, indeed.
And they seem to have a very poor understanding of their role with respect to dealing with municipal issues rather than constantly wading into provincial and federal terrain.
Yes, I think that's a very astute observation.
I find that problematic as well. But I really dislike, I mean, I know they have to do certain in-camera meetings for legal reasons, but they just seem to do too many of them. It seems to be such a struggle to get information out of them. I mean, they slapped on an extra fee for filing FOI requests. We have to pay for staff time now for FOI requests.
Yes, you do.
You know, and that's not how it is anywhere else. I can file an FOI with the province. I can file an FOI with Vic PD, and I can get that, and I don't have to pay for it. I've already paid for it as a taxpayer. Why am I having to pay again?
Hey, Jazzy, you want to do something
that should be readily available in the name of transparency and democracy?
You want to do a fun experiment. File an FOI at City Hall between February 24th and April 24th, because that's tomorrow, for the term "he who must not be named." See what comes back.
He who must not be named?
Yeah, like the Harry Potter thing. Anyway,
okay.
Have a great day, all right? Take care. All right, quick break. After the news, we're back.